Tonight's shiur is on the last parak of Megillah Seicha, the fifth parak, and the shiur's title is Hashgacha and Teshuva. I want to address insights into Hashgacha from based on the last parak of Eicha, and also ideas in Teshuva, which we'll see in two separate psukim. So we'll start with Eicha parak hei pasuk yuches, Al Har Tzion Shishamim Shualim Halchuva, on the Mount of Zion, which is desolate, foxes walk on it. Okay? So the Medrash on this Pasuk, it's actually a Gemara as well, has an interesting story based on the Pasuk. But the pshat of the Pasuk is that the Mikdash and the Har HaBayis is desolate, it's empty, and there are even foxes, animals, that are traveling on Har HaBayis. So if you look at number two, it's Maseches Makos, it's also in the Medrash. There's a famous story brought down, which we're going to try to understand and explain. It starts like this. Kfar haya Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, Mahalchim Baderech. So you have all these Talmidei Chachamim who are strolling along, they're walking along. You had Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva. So all great scholars, Talmidei Chachamim. Vishamu kol hamona shel romi mefalta berachok mea ve'esrim mil. So they heard the crowds of Rome from Palta, which is the name of a city. I think the English is Puteoli. It was one of the seaport cities. And they could hear it 120 mil away, which was very far away. V'eschilu bochen, and they all started to cry. V'Rabbi Akiva misachik, except for Rabbi Akiva, he was really laughing. Okay? So Amru Lo, they said to him, meaning all the other rabbis, the Talmidei Chacham, said to Rabbi Akiva, Mipnei ma'ata misachik, why are you laughing? It's Amru Lahem, he said to them, Va'atem, mipnei ma'atem bochem, why are you crying? Okay, so this is interesting back and forth. So what's the reason? Amru Lo, so they said back to him, they give him a reason. Halalu kushiyim, shemishtachvim la'atzavim, umekatrim la'avodos kochavim, yoshim betach v'hashket. So those heathens, meaning the Romans, who bow down to images, to idols, and they serve incense to their gods, they're sitting and it's easy for them, and it's all quiet and there's tranquility for them. The Anu, Beis Hadom Ragle Elokeinu Sarof Ba'esh V'lo Nifka, but our Beis HaMikdash, which is burnt by fire, and you're not crying? Okay, so that's what they said to him. How come you're not crying? You should cry, because these people, they're evil people, they're not in line with God's will, but yet everything's okay for them. But us, our Beis HaMikdash was destroyed by fire. So how could you not cry at this idea or this concept? So he said back, Amar Lahen, Rabbi Akiva, what was his answer? L'chach ani mitzachek, this is why I'm laughing. Uma l'ovrei ritzono kach, so we see that the ovrei ritzono, those who don't follow God's will, the ovdei avodah zarah, this is what happens to them, that they live a tranquil and easy life. La'ose ritzono al chas kama v'kama, to those who do as well, even more so. Is not the case? Okay? And look at Rashi, just explains it. Number three, source number three. Uma la'ovrei ritzono kach, shemishtachavim la'avodos kochavim shalahem, yoshim b'hashket v'shalva. So the ovdei avodah zarah, the Romans, they bow down to idols, but everything's okay. They're tranquil. There's an ease in their lives. Yisrael she'osin ritzono al chas kama v'kama. If Klal Yisrael do God's will, even more so, she'eshalim lahem schar tov, they'll get a good schar. Okay? So the basic summary of the story is that they're all walking, many Talmidei Chachamim, and they hear the joy of the screaming of the crowds of Rome. And they start crying, except for Rabbi Akiva. And all the Talmidei Chacham say to Rabbi Akiva, why are you, he's laughing. So they say, why are you laughing? And he wants to understand why they're crying. So they're crying because it seems like the Romans got away with everything. They're evil people, and yet everything's okay for them. But us, if you look at Klal Yisrael, it's so bad. We lost our Mikdash. It was destroyed. And Rabbi Akiva has an interesting idea. He says, why am I laughing? Because if this happens to somebody who does bad, so to somebody who does good, even more so, they're going to get a better schar. Okay, so what is strange about this Gemara, or what questions would you ask on the Gemara if you're just looking at the Gemara? So I think an obvious question is that why is Rabbi Akiva focusing on the fact that the non-Jews did evil, and yet it wasn't so bad for them. If you look at the Jews and the Jew situation, we did evil and we didn't follow God's will and we got a lot worse. So why is he looking? Why is he looking at the non-Jews to make his comparison? Why? What is that idea? Why not look at the Jews and what happened to us? It was really bad. So he's saying, oh, to the non-Jews, because they didn't follow God's will, but it wasn't so bad. So therefore, if we follow God's will, then it'll be even better. What is that? Look at what happened to us. We didn't get the same punishment as the non-Jews. We got a lot worse. So why not look at us as opposed to... And what is the machlokas? What is the debate here between the other scholars, the Talmidei Chacham, Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Akiva? What are they arguing about? What didn't they see? What did he see that was different? Okay, so that's the question on this medrash, the first medrash. Does anybody have any possibilities or any thoughts on the medrash? As to why, what the back and forth was between Rabbi Akiva and the other scholars? Okay. So I think the idea, we're going to start with this concept. It's a chiddush in the way Hashgacha works and the way Schar Va'Onesh works. I believe. So what is the concept? And how do we explain Rabbi Akiva's insight? See, all the other Chachamim, they were judging Schar Va'Onesh, or they were looking at Schar Va'Onesh in an objective sense. And they were saying that our situation, and they were looking at it in the particular sense. They were saying our situation is terrible and their situation is good. It doesn't seem fair. It seems like there's an unfairness there in terms of Schar Va'Onesh. Really, they should have it bad and we should have it bad. So it seems to be unfair, and that's why they're crying. They're crying because they don't see, you know, how it makes sense or how it's fair. But what is Rabbi Akiva, what idea is Rabbi Akiva pointing out about Schar Va'Onesh and Hashgacha? He's really showing you that, see, the question is, why didn't the Ovdei Avodah Zarah have it so bad? How would you answer that? Why didn't they have it so bad? Why weren't they punished as badly as the Jews? So there's two ways you can answer that. One way is you can say they weren't as bad as the Jews, but it sounds like they were pretty bad. If you look at Rashi and the Gemara, they're doing Avodah Zarah, they're being Mekatrim, La Avodas Kochavim, it's pretty bad. So why did they get off so easy? So there's a concept being expressed here in Schar Va'Onesh, that there is a relative judgment in Schar Va'Onesh. And let me explain that. See, we normally think of Schar Va'Onesh in the framework of God as being purely objective, that a person is judged, you know, on their own, outside of anything else, and that's how their judgment is pursued by God. But there seems to be an idea of relative justice also. And an example would be, I was thinking about this before this year, but you take like a classroom of kids. So if you have some kids in the classroom who are, let's say, throwing chalk against the blackboard, and you have other kids in the classroom who are burning up, lighting up the desks on fire. So if you look at if you dole out punishments for those two actions, if they existed on their own, and let's say the kids who are throwing chalk to the chalkboard, against the chalkboard, let's say it was only them, then they would be punished a certain way. But when you look at them relative to the kids who burn up the desks and lighted them up on fire, it's not so bad. So their punishment will reflect the fact that they're judged relative to the other kids and not just purely objective, not looking at them on their own. So there's a difference in those two situations. In one situation, the bad thing that they did, the throwing the chalk against the chalkboard looks really bad if it's on its own, if it's outside of the other kids, and objectively they would deserve a certain punishment. But they might get a lesser punishment if you compare them to the kids who are burning up the desks in the classroom. So Rabbi Akiva actually he saw this idea present in Hashgacha and in Schar Va'Onesh. They were looking at it as being unfair, but Rabbi Akiva was showing them that within Schar Va'Onesh there is a relative justice or judgment of Klal Yisrael against the other nations and vice versa. And that's why the other nations weren't judged as harshly as Klal Yisrael, because relative to Klal Yisrael, they weren't as bad. So maybe objectively, if Klal Yisrael didn't exist, they would be punished differently. But there is a phenomenon of comparison, of relative justice when it comes to Schar Va'Onesh. And Rabbi Akiva is saying it may be unfair in this framework, but if you look at it in the other framework, in the framework of schar, in the framework of reward, then it's much better for the Jewish people as well. Because if you're compared to somebody else, and somebody else isn't doing as well as you, and they're not doing good like the non-Jews, and you're doing the good, you're in line with God's will, so your schar is multiplied. It's even greater. it's a greater reward. He says, Rashi says, V'kam mashi yishayim lehem schar tov. So that's really the idea that Rabbi Kiva is pointing out to the other Chachamim. So the first story, based on the Pasuk, is trying to express this Chiddush. The Chiddush is that you might think when you see a situation like that, the other Chachamim, they were looking at it as being unfair. They were looking at the particulars of the situation and saying, it's unfair. Why should the Jews be punished so harshly? And the non-Jews, nothing happened to them? But Rabbi Kiva is saying that there is a good to this idea. And the good, the concept that emerges is that we don't just view each nation on their own, but we look at them and they're viewed relative to one another. And the fact that the non-Jews aren't punished for their evil is because they're judged relative to the Jews. But vice versa works in the favor of the Jews as well. That if the Jews do good, they're not just judged objectively on their own outside of any other nation, but they're also judged relative to the other nation, and their schar is enhanced. They get a greater schar. So that's really a nice insight, a beautiful insight into how schar v'onesh hashgacha works. Okay? Any questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, his response was, why are you crying? Then? So he could have just gone right into understanding that was their perspective, saying, why did he ask them that?
I mean, why are you crying? That's a good question.
And then
What do you think?
I mean, I was thinking that maybe he wanted to see, maybe he was trying to, test the waters and see what their mindset was. As in, were they just thinking about themselves? I don't know. I think he was just trying to get some type of insight into why they were having that emotional reaction. But
I mean, their reaction is a normal reaction. You see it when you see something that seems unfair, like you see a person who did something you feel like it's worse than what you did, and you got punished. Or let's say it's not as bad as what you did, but you got punished so much more harshly, you think it's unfair. But that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying. There is, if you look at it in a certain frame of mind, it does seem unfair. But if you understand that Schar V'Onesh does take into account a comparison of Klal Yisrael to other nations, then you would see that there are situations where it appears unfair, but there really is a justice to it, and vice versa. And then that's what he says: if we do the good, so our reward is enhanced. It's not just that we're judged objectively if we do the good, but we're also judged relative to the other nations.
Right.
It's like the classroom example. You're a teacher; you know what that's like, right? No, but seriously, you know what it's like
when no one burning desks.
No, all right. We hope not. No one's burning desks. But but you know what I'm saying. A lot of times kids are judged compared to others, and it doesn't seem fair, but there is a reality to that idea that when you're surrounded by something that's worse, you get a lesser punishment. It's not unfair. It's just a different way of looking at how to judge people. Okay?
Right.
So that's...
Right.
Okay. All right. So we have another story it's more tied to the Pasuk in Pasuk Yud Ches. The reason why I brought in this Gemara is because the Medrash starts based on this Pasuk with this story, but the next story is really more essentially and specifically tied to the Pasuk of the foxes traveling on Har HaBayis. So we have another story. Shuv, look at number 4 in the Gemara. It's the same Gemara. It's the last daf in Makos. Shuv pam achas hayu olin liYerushalayim. So they're walking again, the same people, and they were going to Yerushalayim. Kevan shehigi lahar tzofim karu bigdehem. So when they saw Har Tzofim, they tore their garments. And Rashi says, that's the din. Karu big dam, the dino liavid hachi. That's the din. This is what you're supposed to do. When you see Har Tzofim and the Mikdash is destroyed and the Yerushalayim is destroyed, you're supposed to tear your begadim. Kevan shi gila Har HaBayis. Once they got to Har HaBayis, ra'u shual shi yatsa mi beis kodesh HaKadoshim. They saw a fox coming out of the area that was the kodesh HaKadoshim. So they started crying again, but Rabbi Akiva once again starts laughing, and it's funny to him. So Amr Lo, they said to him, "Mipnei ma'atam mitzachik? Why are you laughing?" Amr Lahem, "Mipnei ma'atam bochim?" Same thing. He says, "Why are you crying?" So Amr Lo, they said to him, to Rabbi Akiva, "Makom shekasuv bo v'azar kariv yumas," the place where it says that if a non-Kohen walks into, they'll die. The achshav shualim halchubo v'lonifke, and now we see that foxes are, are walking on the same area, and you're not going to cry. So Amar Lehani said, "Lechach ani mitzachik." This is why I'm laughing. Okay, so now he has a different answer. Dichsiv, it says in Yeshayahu, Ches Va'idali edim ne'amonim es Uriah ha'kohen ve'zicharya ben Yivarchayu. Okay, so take for me trustworthy witnesses. And who are they? Uriah and Zicharya. Okay, then the question, v'chi ma'inyan Uriah etzel Zicharya? What does Uriah have to do with Zicharya? They lived in different times. So the pasuk in Yeshayahu is saying that Zicharya and Uriah are witnesses, but they lived in different time periods. If you look in Rashi, Uriah was b'mikdash rishon haya, kikasav b'sefer malachim. Zicharya minevim achronim haya, shahaya b'mikdash sheni. Zicharya lived in the second mikdash. That's what the Gemara says. V'chima inen Uriah etel Zicharya. Uriah b'mikdash rishon and Zicharya b'mikdash sheni. What do they have to do with each other? Why is the pasuk even mentioning them in the same pasuk? Ella, rather, tala hakasav nivuaso shel Zicharya b'nivuaso shel Uriah. So the Tanakh is telling you that the nevuah of Zecharia is tied to the nevuah of Uriah. But Uriah ksiv, in Uriah it says, Lachin biglalchem tzion sada techaresh, because of you, tzion will become a plowed field. Bezecharia ksiv, od yeshvu zekenim uzekanos berachovos Yerushalayim. Then in the future, when the mikdash is rebuilt, there will be older men and women in the streets of Yerushalayim. Ad shelo niskayma nevuaso shel Uriah, until I saw the nevuah of Uriah, that Sion will become a plowed field. Hayisi misyare, I was afraid. Shelo tiskayim nevuaso shel Zicharya. Perhaps Zecharia's nevuah will never occur, will never happen. Achshav shel niskayma nevuaso shel Uriah, but now that I see that the nevuah, the prophecy of Uriah, has come about and it's true, because they saw the shual coming out and walking on the Harabayas, biyadua shenivuaso shel Zicharya miskayemes. Now I know for a fact that Zechariah's nevuah will be fulfilled. Balashan azeh amrulo Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu. And then in the end, they say to him, they said back to you, Rabbi Akiva, you have given us comfort. You've given us comfort. Okay? And the idea being, just to summarize the Gemara, it's a similar story as before. They come to Harabayas, and they see a fox in the Makom Kodesh HaKadoshim, and everybody starts crying except for Rabbi Akiva. Why are they crying? Because they say that in a place which was reserved for Kohanim, who are Kadoshim, now there's an animal walking there in the same place. And he says, no, there's a different idea here. What's the idea? That by seeing this, by seeing the desolation and the destruction of Harabayas, so now he understand, or now he will see the fulfillment. He can see or believe in the fulfillment of Zechariah's nevuah, that eventually the mikdash will be rebuilt, and because of that, they get nechama out of Rabbi Akiva's statement or Rabbi Akiva's insight. Okay, so now once again, the question is, what is the difference between Rabbi Akiva and how did Rabbi Akiva view it differently than they viewed it? What was the difference between the two? Okay, what's the insight that we can gain from Rabbi Akiva's statements? And also, this is the last part. The last part says, and I think we can answer this from the end also. The last part says that they felt nechama. They said, Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu. So why did what Akiva, Rabbi Akiva say, give them comfort? How did it give them comfort? Okay, so those are the questions on the Gemara. All right, what did we say? We said earlier about nechama. When does a person feel nechama? Like real nechama. So a person after something tragic happens, you look for answers. You want to understand how it fits in, you know, how what the reason for this was, but not just the reason for this, but you know, you want to see it within the context of a bigger plan, and you want to see why this happened. Perhaps when you view an event on its own, so you can come up with certain conclusions. When a tragedy occurs, you can come up with certain conclusions. But then when you see later events, it gives you a better idea of why certain things occurred in the way that they occurred, and it gives you greater insight and greater appreciation and also comfort, because you realize that it didn't just happen for, you know, nothingness, but there was a reason behind it, or there was a deeper plan or a bigger plan involved. Okay, and we said that earlier, I think in the first year on Eichel, when we talked about the lack of comfort, we said that that's part of the idea of comfort, that one of the ideas of comfort is that it emerges from getting those answers to the questions that bother us, that when we witness a tragedy, we don't understand why it happened, we want to understand, we want to see it not just in itself, but how it fits into a broader context. So that's the idea, I think, that fits into the idea of the back and forth here also, as well. And it's similar to the Gemara before, but how do we explain it? See, when they came to Yerushalayim in Harabayas, they saw the shual there, they saw the fox there, And it comes back to our pasuk, Ahar Tzion Sheshamim Shu'alim Halchubo. But their idea was that it's a terrible thing to see that the Kedushas Harabayas is completely removed. And that's why it's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the most holiest place, which was reserved for holy people, was completely destroyed. There was no Kedusha there anymore. And that's the concept of the Shu'al there. But what Rabbi Akiva is saying, that he understood this fulfillment of the prophecy, not in itself, but he understood it within a broader context. And as I've been illustrating through the idea of the tragedy, that when you see a tragedy within a broader context, it gives you comfort because you have more answers. You understand why it had to be this way. So the concept of Zechariah is not, the concept of Rabbi Akiva, it's not that he didn't believe, it's strange. The Gemara says he didn't believe that Zechariah's Nevuah would come about. What do you mean? It's Zechariah and it's a Nevuah. So how could he not believe that it would come about? It's not that he didn't believe it. It's that he didn't understand it. He didn't understand how it fit into the general plan, the broader plan, and how the Hashgacha fit in with that concept. So the idea that Rabbi Akiva is emphasizing is that he sees the Shu'al on Har HaBayis not in itself, not as a Nevuah being Mekayim in itself, but in a broader context, in the context of the, you know, rebuilding the Mikdash. And through that, they were given Nechama. But what is that? I was thinking about the concept. Why would it have to be that? Why do you think it has to be that Uriah's Nevuah had to come true? Or what is that idea that the Shu'al is in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Why would that make sense? Or how does that fit into the idea of eventually the Mikdash being rebuilt? So I think I was thinking about an idea of starting from scratch, the starting from scratch idea. It's hard to understand it or perceive it, but I think what Rabbi Akiva saw was that the Mikdash and the Har HaBayis, it had to be stripped of Kedusha completely. See, if there was still some remnant of the Kedushas Mikdash, Rishon and Sheni, then Klal Yisrael would forever be attached to the corruption that caused its destruction. But the idea that Rabbi Akiva is expressing about the Nevuah of Uriah is that in order for the Mikdash to be rebuilt, the Klal Yisrael has to start from scratch, and they have to be dissociated from the Mikdash, and the Mikdash has to lose, or there has to be a demonstration of a complete loss of Kedusha of Har HaBayis. So that's the idea that Rabbi Akiva was showing and expressing to his fellow Talmidei Chachamim, that you can't look at this on its own. You have to look at it within the broader plan. And also the concept that Klal Yisrael need this in order to rebuild. They need to start from scratch. It has to be the Har HaBayis is removed from its former state in order for Klal Yisrael to rebuild. So that was a critical idea in understanding the Nevuah, Nevuas Uriah, Nevuas Zechariah, and in bringing about Nechama to these Talmidei Chachamim. Okay? And that's why, as I said before in the Shir, it's really attached to the first source in the Shir. Al Har Tzion Sheshamim Shu'alim Halchubo. Now that's the concept of the Shu'al walking there, that the Mikdash was completely stripped of any of its Kedusha, but Rabbi Akiva saw it as being necessary for the building blocks of the next Mikdash. Okay? All right. Is that clear? Anybody have questions? Any different thoughts, any different ideas on the two Gemaras?
It's funny that he was like laughing about it, because you would think that now, I mean, at this point now, it's appropriate to be sad. Was he just doing it to...
That's a good question. I was thinking that when you see an idea, like when you see a new insight into Hashgacha or into something as lofty as how Schar V'Onesh works, it's hard to conceal, you know, a certain appreciation or happiness. So even though the situation of the Mikdash being destroyed was a sad situation, but you see he was Korea his begadim halachically, so it says they all did. So he did tear his begadim because that was a halacha, but when he saw the insight here, like, he couldn't stop but smile, I think, because it was he didn't see this before, and now he was able to see like a new idea. So that was able to overcome the sadness of the particular situation of experiencing the destruction of the Mikdash. Okay, good question though. That's what I think. That's my when I was reading the Gemara, when I was learning the Gemara, that's what I was thinking, that concept. But it could be what you're saying. You're saying that really he was just trying to show them the opposite, or is almost like a demonstration towards them of the opposite. I'm just saying. I'm saying it's because he didn't see this idea beforehand, and now when he came across this situation, these ideas emerged. And when you see an idea about God, especially a deep idea about how Schar V'Onesh works or how Hashgach works, when you see an idea like that and it's something new, you can't stop but smile or laugh. It's just enjoyable.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. All right. So now we come to a famous pasuk, and also I'm going to finish this year with just a little halachic point, a small halachic point. So if we look at number 6, it's the most famous pasuk, I think, in Eicha, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha V'Nashuva Chadesh Aminu Kikada. So we say that Hashem should restore us towards Him, V'Nashuva, and we will be restored, Chadesh Aminu Kikada. So our days should be like the days earlier, the earlier days, anew our days, make our days anew, like earlier days, okay? So this is the second part of the shiur. The first part was on Hashgacha, and the insights into Hashgacha that we can gain from Eicha, but now we're going to take up Tshuva. And there's an interesting discussion in the Medrash Eicha about this pasuk. If you look at number 7, it says, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha V'Nashuva. So it says, Hashem, bring us, restore us, and we will be restored, or we will do Tshuva. Amra Knesset Yisrael Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Knesset Yisrael means like Klal Yisrael. They said before God, Ribono shel Olam, Hashem, Shelcha Hu, Hashivenu, it's up to you. Bring us closer to you. Amar Lahem, he said to them, Shelachem Hu, it's yours. Shenamar, as it says in Zechariah, Shuvu Eilai v'ashuva Aleichem, Neum Hashem. So you come back to me, and then I'll come back to you. So Amar Lefanov, so Knesset Yisrael, Klal Yisrael said before God, Ribono shel Olam, Shelcha Hu, it's really yours. Shenamar, Shuvenu Elokei Yishenu. L'chach ne'amar, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha V'Nashuva. That's why it says, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha V'Nashuva. Okay? So there's a back and forth between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. Klal Yisrael is saying to God, it's yours, Hashivenu, bring us close. And he's saying, no, it's up to you. You have to do tshuva, and then V'Ashuva Aleicha, Neum Hashem, and then I'll come back to you. And then in the end, it really says, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha, but the end of it says V'Nashuva. So it's really... If we're going to see, but it's really a combination that really, it's really up to Hashem, and He initiates Hashivinu Hashem Eilecha, and then V'Nashuva, and then it's up to us also. Okay, so what is this? What's this back and forth in the Medrash? How would you explain the back and forth between Klal Yisrael and Hashem? Why would you say that? What does it mean that Klal Yisrael is saying to Hashem, it's up to you? Why is it up to God? Okay, so this is an insight into Tshuva. So there's two ways of understanding, or there's two concepts in Tshuva, or two ways that explains the back and forth in this Medrash. So one idea that Klal Yisrael is saying initially is Hashivenu, that you have to bring us close and restore us. It's up to you, God. So Klal Yisrael, their argument is that if there is no Hashgacha and there's a minimal relationship between Klal Yisrael and Hashem, so it's virtually impossible for us to do Tshuva. Why? Because we don't have any surrounding environment. We don't have anything around us to help us, and the situation is too difficult for us. It's too, especially if we're downtrodden and we're in the clutches of other nations. So how are we supposed to do tshuva if we can't? If we're not surrounded by a proper environment of tshuva, it's just impossible. The Havamina saints, an impossibility for Klal Yisrael as a whole to do tshuva without us having hashgacha. And having Hashem help us and bring us closer first. But the other side, the other way, and the back and forth is a philosophical debate. The other side saying, no, it's really based on Bechira. And Bechira operates even in the most dire situation. So it's very nice that you're in a difficult situation and it's harder for you to do tshuva. But ultimately, Hashem saying back to Klal Yisrael, it's up to you, really, that you have Bechira. Tshuva is based on free choice. And free choice is never eliminated. I mean, other than by paro and special situations of onesh, but free choice isn't eliminated. So as hard as it is to do tshuva, and as dire as the situation is, and even though if there's no surrounding environment to help you do tshuva, ultimately tshuva is in the hands of man, and it's really a bechira decision. But what's the answer? The answer is that really it's really a compromise of the two. That it can't be all Hashem. It's not all environments. you can't say that man is doesn't have bechira, and it's all about environment and how they and the situation that man's in. And on the other hand, bechira can't work in it. Just can't it can't work in certain situations for Klal Yisrael. It's not eliminated, but it's a practical impossibility for Klal Yisrael to do tshuva in certain situations. So the answer, the pasuk, is really expressing an idea in tshuva. Hashivinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva, that Hashem initiates it. He brings us closer through hashgacha, and He helps us. And we also have to do our part. We have to do tshuva, and we have to, with God, we have to be shavim. And the Torah Tzmima says this idea, number 8. He expresses this concept. It says, there's a mistake in the Torah Tzmima, so just try to follow along. Rotzeh lomar, lefisha matzinu shetshuvas Yisrael hi biyadam uviyad HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the chiddush of Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva is that tshuva is really... It really consists of a combination of Hashem and Klal Yisrael. Klomar shetzarch siyua mishnei hatzdadim. They need to be helped from the two sides. Valdash amru habalitar misayin oso. Like it says in Yuma, if a guy wants to be tar, you have to help him. L'chach nemar hashivenu Hashem elecha v'nashuva. That's why it says that Hashem should bring us or restore us, and we'll be restored, or we will do tshuva. D'lecha ora michevan she'omrim hashivenu harehem shavim usmuchim ze itzol ze. So if it just says Hashivenu, you would think that we don't have to do anything, that we're closer to God. God brings us close. He creates the situation of tshuva ultimately, and He creates the optimal situation, and then we're close to God, and we don't have to do anything. But the end, it says, if you have to skip down to the last line, Ela b'mdei shetzarach tziyua mishnei atzadim. But really, we need help from both standpoints. L'chach omrim hashivenu mitzidcha, meaning Hashem has to bring a hashgacha, give us hashgacha, v'nashuva mitzidenu. And we also have to do tshuva on our own. We have to operate and utilize our bechira and overcome our deficits to do tshuva. So really, the pasuk of Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva is expressing a deep idea about tshuva and hashgacha and how it works. That on the one hand, we can't say that tshuva is eliminated in a dire situation, and we can't say it's all about God creating a situation, an optimal situation for us, and then we can do tshuva. But we need a combination of the two, that God has to help us a little bit, He has to initiate it, and then only then can Klal Yisrael as a whole do tshuva. And I think the pasuk isn't talking about the yachid, it's talking about Klal Yisrael as a whole. So really, like the Torah Tmima says, really in tshuva and restoring Klal Yisrael, we need a combination of hashgacha. If we don't have any hashgacha, it's practically impossible. Even though we still have bechira, but even though every man and every nation has free choice, but if you put them in a certain situation, it's just practically impossible for them to act on the free choice. But on the other hand, it can't all be God. It can't just be that God creates a situation of hashgacha and we don't have to do anything, and that it's not hard for us and we don't have to overcome anything. So that's the idea of tshuva, that tshuva and overcoming our flaws and true tshuva emerges, but it's initiated by hashgacha to Klal Yisrael as a whole. Okay? And then we come to the end, Chadesh Amin HaKikadem, which fits into the last point. So Chadesh Amin HaKikadem, the Medrash goes on. It says, Ka'adam HaRishon, I think it's in Command of Omar, Vayigarish Esa Adam Vayashkein Mikedem Lagan Eden. So what does it mean that Hashem, it says, Hashivin Hashem Elech V'Nashuva Chadesh Amin HaKikadem, that we should be restored to the days, to the earlier days. What earlier days? What's it referring to? So the first pshat is that it's referring to the days of Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden. And they quote a pasuk because it says, Vayigarish Esa Adam Vayashkein Mikedem. So it uses the same idea, Mikedem. Just like it says Chadesh Amin HaKikadem, it says that by Adam HaRishon. So that's one possibility. Davar Acher, but another possibility is Chadesh Amin HaKikadem, Command Omar, like it says in Molach Gimel, V'arva L'Hashem Minchas Yehuda V'Yushalayim Kimei Olam Uchshanim Kadmonios, that our mincha, our korban, or korbanos, will be soothing and pleasant to Hashem of Yehuda and Yushalayim Kimei Olam as the days of old Uchshanim Kadmonios, as the earlier years. And what is that referring to? Kimei Olam Ze Moshe, that's referring to Korbanos in the time of Moshe and the Midbar. Dechsev, Vayizkor Yimei Olam Moshe Amo. Uchshanim Kadmonios Kishno Shlomo. And the second idea is like the times of Shlomo, where we had the Mikdash and we had Korbanos then. That's one idea. Rabbi Omer, Kimei Olam Kimei Noach, Shneamar Kimei Noach Zosli. So the other possibility is it's like the time of Noach, where Noach brought a Korban after the Mabul. Uchshanim Kadmonios Kishnos Hevel, That's a reference to Hevel, Shelo Haisa Avodas Kochavim Adayin Ba'olam. That Avodah Zarah was not in the world yet. Okay, so we have a basic machlokes here. What does it mean that Hashem should bring about the days of the earlier days? So one idea is that we should be like, it should be like Adam Arishon. And the other idea is that we should have Korbanos back. But there's two situations of Korbanos. One is in the Mishkan and the Mikdash. And the other one is in the time of Noach and the time of Hevel. Okay, so what are these concepts? What are we asking for exactly? So what would you say the idea of Adam Arishon is, Gan Eden? How would you describe the existence of Gan Eden? Debbie? Or anybody on the phone line? How would you describe the existence of Gan Eden? Why would we ask for that? And how does that fit into the framework of tshuva? What was the existence of Gan Eden? It was the concept that man was taking care... Yeah, go ahead, please. Good.
Purity?
Good, purity, yes, good. Okay, it was purity. There was no chait at that before. I know the pasuk's referring to afterwards, but the time of Adam Arishon and Gan Eden, there was really, it was really a pure state. But just to add to that, it was really a state where man could live on the highest level. Everything was taken care of for man. You had all the fruits and the food that he needed, and he barely had to work. The Gemara says, L'avda l'shamra, that he had to do a little work, but that was only for man's benefit that he worked. But he didn't really have to work. Everything was really taken care of. It was really the ultimate ideal situation where man could learn about God, study God, and not have to worry about anything, right? So the one idea of Chadesh HaMinei HaKedem is that that's what we want. We really want a situation where everything's taken care of for us, so we don't have to. So we can focus our ideas, our minds on learning and learning about God, and also doing tshuva. And that's really what we're searching for. We're searching for a zman which is like the time of Adam Arishon. But what's the problem with that? What's the other side? The other side's saying no. That Chadesh HaMinei HaKedem means bring back korbanos. We're asking Hashvin Hashem Elecha v'Nashuva, that restore us and we'll do tshuva, and also bring back an earlier state of time, a time where korbanos existed, right? So the first side is saying that we want, what is it, Chadesh HaMinei HaKedem, that we want a state where everything is taken care of, an optimal state for us to learn about God. But the other side saying that, I think it's saying that, we can't really exist in that state anymore. And we saw from Adam Arishon that man in general cannot really exist in that state. So instead, we want a situation where we can relate to God through avoda, and that's korbanos. So there's two ways of understanding Chadesh HaMinei HaKedem. Either we're looking for the optimal situation of Ashgacha, where we're taken care of and we're able to focus on ideas and knowledge and Torah. But the other possibility is that we're looking for an opportunity to relate to God through the avoda, korbanos, avodas Hashem. And there's two situations where I would say avodas Hashem was really pure. It was really a pure avodas Hashem. One was in the time of Moshe and the time of Shlomo. Why? Because you had Mikdash, and the whole idea of Mikdash is to gear man's thoughts and emotions towards the proper idea of God. And in that framework, they gave korbanos. So that was really an ideal state of korbanos. But the other situation of the ideal was in the time of Noach and the time of Hevel. Why does it matter that there was no Avodah Zarah? See, in the time of Hevel, there was no corruption to the korban. See, when Avodah Zarah emerges, the idea of korbanos in the framework of Avodah Zarah is corrupt because they view it as appeasing the God. But our idea of korbanos is pure. It's an idea of Avodas Hashem without any distortion or any corruption. So the type of Noach also expressed that after he came off the Teva, it was a pure korban of Hodah. There was no distortion. It was just a pure avoda, pure service to God. So the idea is that the basic question is, do we want a state, or are we searching or asking for an optimal state, or are we asking for a state where we can relate to God through korbanos and avoda, and even if we mess up, we have the opportunity to relate to God through avoda. And the best situations of avoda are in the Mikdash or Mishkan, where man's emotions and minds are geared towards the proper idea of God. But the other state, which was a pure state of avoda, was expressed by Noach and Hevel, because there was no avoda zara, there was the absence of distortion. So those are the two situations of avoda. One is where we have the halachos of Mikdash to gear us to the proper way, and the other is a situation where the world didn't have any distortion or distorted idea of God, and therefore their korbanos were pure. The avoda, the service of God, was a pure service. Okay? Let me just finish off the shir with just halachic points. I think it's a simpler idea. So we have in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's related to Hashivinu Hashem Eilecha V'Nashuva. If you go to Shua by Eicha, we say it out loud. And the Ramah brings down this idea. He says, look in the Shulchan Aruch. It says, Im chal tishba b'moti Shabbos, hein omrim tzitkoscha b'mincha b'Shabbos, fine. U'mavdil m'layla b'tfila kishar moti Shabbos. V'im shachach m'lahavdil, ayin le'el simen reish tadidah. U'mispalim b'nachas, so you daven b'nachas v'derech b'chi ka'avelim. You're supposed to daven like you're an avel with crying. V'chein osim b'kriyas eicha. Also, when you read eicha, you're supposed to do it with crying and sadness. V'chol eicha magbia kolo yoser. Every time you come to eicha, you're supposed to raise up your voice. That's the Maharil. U'kshemagia achazan l'pasuk hashivenu. So when the chazan gets to hashivenu, omer moso hakal b'kol ram. So the whole kal says it out loud. V'achar kach masayim hachazan. And then the chazan ends. He ends the Eicha, v'chuzar kav omrim hashivenu b'kol ram, and then they say it again, b'hashivenu at the end, v'chein hachazan, and the chazan also. So really, hashivenu is pasuk chaf aleph, and then after hashivenu is another pasuk, ki ma'os ma'astanu, and then afterwards, the minhag is that the people say it out loud, hashivenu Hashem Eilecha, and the chazan has to repeat pasuk chaf aleph, almost as if it's the last pasuk. And the question is, why? Why does the chazan have to repeat Hashivenu? So Rashi on Eicha explains it. He says in number 10, Hashivenu Hashem, v'pnei shemesayim b'divrei tochecha. So the ki imos ma'astanu is really tochecha, it's rebuke. Hutzrach lichbol mikra shelofanav. That's why we double up the pasuk before, Hashivenu Hashem eilech v'nashuva pam acheres, v'chein yeshaya v'treasar v'kweles. We do it by those svarim as well, that we double up a pasuk before, because we don't want to end on tochecha. We don't want to end the sefer on rebuke, right? So that's the idea. So if we end with ki imos ma'astanu, that it's so bad for us, our situation is so bad, and we're so distraught, so we don't want to end the sefer that way. So instead, the people in the chazan say, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva. But the question is, why? Why don't we want to end with tochecha, with the idea of tochecha? Okay? It reminded me of halacha, just before we answer that, it reminded me of halacha. Somebody, hopefully, think about that question, but it reminded me of halacha in the Rambam. It's by Kriyas HaTorah. It's the same halacha. It says, Kol ha'ola likros b'torah posech b'davar tov v'masayim b'davar tov. That when you have the aliyahs in the Torah, you're supposed to start with a good event, and you're supposed to end with a good event. But you're not supposed to start with something bad and end with something bad. Except for Parshas Hazinu. And then he breaks it up, and he says the reason why by Parshas Avinu Hazinu we break it up like that. V'lama poskin ba b'in yanos elu b'pnei shehin tochecha k'dei sheyachzor on b'tshuva. So there we say that you should end it on tochecha. Why? So that the people do tshuva. So what's the difference between Hazinu and Eicha? Why do we say by Eicha that we don't end it by tochecha? Don't end it on tochecha. We end it on Hashivenu, but by Hazinu we say no, that you do end it on tochecha, so that they do tshuva. But let's take up the first question. Why does it matter that it's bad? Why can't you end something on a bad note? What's the problem with that? Why do you have to double up Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha? All right? This is a question for the people on the phone.
It gives like a negative almost ending. People are going to kind of give up. You want to end with a positive note.
Good. Okay, good.
For rebuilding.
Right, so you're saying that the end of something, people remember it, right? It gives you like a taste of what the whole Sefer was about. When you end something, right, even by the Torah also, when you end an Aliyah in a certain way, so if it's bad, you'll have like a negative association with Torah. So same thing with Eicha. You want people to study Eicha. You don't want people to be turned off to Sefer Eicha. You want them to study the harshness of Eicha because it should bring a person to tshuva, but you want them to have a pleasant taste in their mouth when the sefer is over, in order for them to come back to it, in order for them to actually be motivated to do tshuva, and that's why I think
if you're critiquing someone, it's always important to give positive feedback as well.
Exactly, good, right. So that's the idea of Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha, exactly, because you don't want them to just be distraught about the nature of all the bad things that happened to us, but you actually want the end of the sefer, that which you remember the sefer by, to have a positive idea, Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva, which is positive. So that's why I think also the chazan has to repeat it, but also the people have to repeat it, because they're the ones who are going to remember Eicha, and this should be that they remember Eicha with Hashivenu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva, and not with ki imos ma'astanu. So that's the idea. It's to create a positive association with Klal Yisrael and the Sefer in order for to get them to actually learn it, come back to it, learn it, and also to do tshuva. You're not going to do tshuva if you are completely broken down. And I think that's the difference between Hazinu and Echa. See, Echa, Hazinu was really meant to be read, and it was meant to be given as tochacha to the people, as almost like as a speech. And the idea of Hazinu is that it was created for that purpose. And if it's geared for that purpose, so you can end it on tochacha, because it's really meant to bring the people to do tshuva. But really, Echa is really a sefer of limud. It's really a sefer to learn and to gain all these ideas, all the ideas that we discovered throughout all the shiurim on Echa. But on a secondary note, when it's read in public, it's also, you know, it's also an idea of tshuva, of bringing about tshuva, right? But it's not essentially an idea in Kriya. It's really essentially a sefer to learn, and essentially a sefer for limud, to study. But when it's done in the public framework, in the public spectrum, so it has to be that the tochacha is a little bit lessened at the end, Hashivin Hashem Elecha V'Nashuva, so that the people come to learn it, and so that the people have a positive association with Echa as well. So I think that explains why it's a weird thing, but you're taking a pasuk of Chaf Aleph, and then there's Chaf Beis, which is the last pasuk of Echa, but when you do the Kriya, you have to double up Hashivin Hashem Elecha V'Nashuva in order that Klal Yisrael have a positive association with the idea of Echa, and only then could they really be inspired to do tshuva. You're not going to be inspired to do tshuva if the tochacha is too harsh, if it's not conducive to inspiring the people to do tshuva. Okay? So we covered a lot of ground, a lot of ideas in the shiur, and I know it was a lot, so let me just summarize it. It's the last paragraph of Eicha, and we did one idea was on Hashgacha, and there were two insights into Hashgacha that Rabbi Akiva notices and he's happy about. One is that there is a relative justice in Scharva Onesh, that we don't just look at the event on its own or Klal Yisrael on their own, but there is a relative. We are compared to the other nations, and that benefits us when it comes to Schar. And the other idea is that you have to look at a particular event, not just on its own, but in the context of a broader plan. And Rabbi Akiva saw that the idea of the Shu'al on the Har HaBayis was not just a terrible nevuah coming for being fulfilled on its own, but it really fit into a broader idea of rebuilding the Mikdash in the future. And he was trying to express that idea to his friends, his other Talmidei Chacham, and they gained nechama because now they could see this tragedy in a different light, in the context of a broader plan. And then we talked about Hashivenu Hashem Elecha V'Nashuva, now the combination of Hashgacha and Shuva, and that really Eicha is telling us that Shuva on Klal Yisrael and from a national level, it can't just be God, meaning it can't just be that we're placed in surroundings that are conducive and it'd be easy for us to do Shuva, and it can't be that we're in a horrible situation and we could just turn on our Bechira and do Shuva, because practically that's not the case, but it has to be a combination of Hashgacha and Klal Yisrael. We have to have some help and be in some situation where we can do tshuva, and only then can we turn on the Bechira and operate in the framework of Bechira, of free choice. And then what are we asking for? Chadesh HaMinah Kikadem. Either we're asking for the optimal state of man, or we're asking for just the ability to relate to God through a pure avoda of korbanos. And those are in the Mikdash and the Mishkan, or in the time of Noach, and the time of Hevel. And then the last idea was doubling up Hashivenu Hashem Elecha V'Nashuva, that we double it up in order that we have a positive association with the tochacha of Eicha, that we don't relate to Eicha as just purely sad and depressing, but we do see it as a sefer that's supposed to inspire us to do tshuva. But for the people, it's important that we have that positive association. And I think it's a similar halacha in the Torah as well, that we end Aliyahs on a good note so that there's a positive association with Torah and that we come to learn it. Okay, so that's really the tonight's shiur, and that's the end of tonight's shiur. Anybody have any questions on the shiur or any different thoughts on the ideas or different ideas? All right, so tonight's